Yeah, I hear it. Yeah.
Okay. Welcome. You're tuned in to Blog Talk Radio's On Point with Mr. Ron Edwards in Studio A and myself, Don Allen. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
Man, I can't complain. Don, beautiful weather here in Minnesota, man. You know, snow off the ground again almost. Temperatures balmy, breaking records and et cetera. So, you know, I guess we'll have technically a real short winter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And get on to the business. Of course, that's not good for law and order. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, that's right. It is, because just yesterday the mayor and the chief police were saying just how much crime is down, man. You know, I mean, we are basically a crime-free city, man.
Yeah, we're crime-free. It's everything's under control. And, you know, matter of fact, violent crime down by 6%. You know, something to celebrate.
Again.
Yeah, again.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they said, what, 46, 47% since 2006 at all levels of crime, though they had to kind of readjust the arson figures because of all those homes that got burnt up out there and garages out there around 37, 38, 39th and Snelling. Oh, by the way, man, can Matt McKinney and them ever get the numbers right on the homicide? I was looking at a report that they made around the 18th of December, and they said that there had been 26, and then 3 days later they upgraded it to 35, and then allegedly yesterday they said 32. So do we know how many people have actually been victims of homicide?
Now, according to Star Tribune, well, we don't. I mean, like you said, Mr. Evans, the story changes. The number changes whenever they decide to put out a number. You know, they had stopped early last year putting out the numbers altogether.
Yeah. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, some say because of us here on this program.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of keeping a checklist, unfortunately. So do we know? Do we have any clue? What was the reason? I mean, I know the answer came to my own question, but for the purpose of flow of conversation, why did they now all of a sudden start mentioning the three young African Americans killed within an 8-day period back in the midsummer during the heat and everything? When we talked about that here on Point, people kind of laughed at us and et cetera, but you know, we didn't know what we were talking about. Now the mayor and them are identifying the 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and 16-year-old that were all shot and killed within 8 days.
Yeah,
none of it's been solved, you know.
Okay.
Why are we talking about that now?
You know, I don't know why they bring that up. It seems like almost a promotional kind of thing, a platform for the mayor and folks and the mayor's public relations arm, the Star Tribune. And so it seems like whenever they need to go reach back and promote the mayor saying, or the city of Minneapolis and the mayor saying that the crime is down, you know, they bring in other cases. But yet, you know, they do their readers and the mayor does his constituents a disservice by that smokescreen stuff that they have going.
Okay. Now, the mayor came. Did he came in with the governor at the funeral for. The 3-year-old African American victim, Terrell Mays. He was with. Did he come in with the governor, or did they come together?
I didn't see the mayor at the funeral, Mr. Edwards. I saw the governor at the funeral. I saw the mayor's public policy aide, Sherman Patterson, there.
I'm sorry. Okay. I thought that some way or another they had, you know, he wasn't in the picture. I saw the big picture the other day, Saturday, Thursday's edition of the paper. In fact, we're looking at it, just pulled it back up here in studio. And I saw the governor, and I thought maybe the mayor was standing a little bit further to the side and was somewhere or another was cut out of the picture. But, he didn't make the funeral? Okay. So, hey, is this true? I'm hearing, is there some kind of dispute because the African-American ministerial leadership, Baptist convention, they're outraged and concerned because you suggested that they didn't have anything to do with the governor being there? Is there something going on here that we need to know about?
Yeah, there's a story there I'm going to have to share with you and our listeners. You know, the funeral of young Terrell, 3-year-old young Terrell, the baby, Terrell Mays, I was there, and, you know, we're catching wind. I'm sitting there that the governor's showing up. The governor's showing up, and I'm sitting in the back row of the church, right? And I see Sandra Samuels, I see Lissa Jones, I see all these people getting off the pulpit before the funeral starts, running to the back of the church to go into the pastor's office. And then, you know, I'm chicken necking. I'm looking around. I want to make sure ain't nothing popping off in there. And lo and behold, here comes Governor Dayton with his advisor walked in. And it just so happens that Reverend Jerry McAfee, who was there, I asked him, I said, what the mayor's doing here? He says, you know, I'm responsible.
You mean the governor. Governor. You said mayor.
Governor.
Uh-huh.
I'm responsible for getting the governor here today. I said, oh, okay.
Okay.
And then, you know, I didn't know any better, Mr. Edwards. I said, okay, I just took it for a grain of salt. But then I remember that lady who coordinated the funeral and the music and the different things and helps people on a voluntary basis, you know, lay their children to rest, Miss Helen Williams was there. And
okay.
And I walked up to Miss Helen Williams. I said, Miss Williams, I understand that Reverend McAfee is responsible for the governor showing up today at the funeral. And I thought she bit her lip because I thought she wanted to say something funny or inappropriate at the funeral. But she says, no, I'm responsible and I have proof.
Okay.
I'm just saying that's what I was told. You know,
uh-huh.
It's a different story here. We're going to have to hash this out to figure this all out, you know. And
uh-huh.
And she says, I've had conversations with Governor Mark Dayton here since January 3rd and December 25th, all the way back to December 31st. She had, or Christmas Day on, she had conversations with Mark Dayton. And it just so happened she had proof because it was on Facebook. Ms. Williams actually sent me the conversation. Cut out has a JPEG picture, as they call it here, with Mark Dayton and herself, you know, him talking about the funeral. Matter of fact, there was a piece, Mr. Edwards, that I read on the air, I think, two shows ago, that was a statement from Ms. Helen Williams that was talking about she was trying to help the family bury their son, and the mother just broke down tremendously. And I had read that statement. I also retyped it and put it on my Facebook page. And what I'm looking at now is Ms. Helen Williams actually took the rewrite from my page and actually sent that as a message to the governor, governor of Minnesota, with that particular statement. And so it was pretty interesting to find out that, you know, not everything green is, shines as gold, and that Reverend McAfee would even make that statement, that position statement, like he was responsible for bringing the governor to this funeral or informing him of it. So
wow. I don't understand why that was even necessary to be done. I mean, wow. You'd think, like, you know, we'd all be, on behalf of the family, we would all be gracious that the governor in a situation like that saw this as an important enough event to come and to speak and to be there. Why would somebody want to make it appear that they were involved and then insist that they were? And then I understand he's repudiating the documentation from Ms. Williams?
Yeah, absolutely, you know. And I asked, you know, that if that is the case, you know, we're live on the air now. He can pick up the phone and dial 877-572-4288 and tell his side of the story. We're fair and balanced like Fox, you know. And if he has a side, or if he has proof, or can he show some conversation like Ms. Helen Williams has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was the person responsible for bringing Mark Dayton or asking him to attend young Tyrell Mays' funeral.
Now, I understand that there is a document that has the governor of the state of Minnesota thanking her for extending the invitation to him to be there at this very somber moment. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, Mr. Edwards. It says, from Mark Dayton, Dear Helen, I will be attending tomorrow's funeral. Please say hello to me if you have a minute. Thank you for your invitation. Your friend, Mark Dayton.
Let me be absolutely transparent and clear here, Mr. Allen. He said, for your invitation. He didn't say an invitation from yourself and others. He said, your invitation, singular,
yes.
Right?
Again, and I quote,
okay.
Dear Helen, I will be attending tomorrow's funeral. Please say hello to me if you have a minute. Governor Dayton understood that she was knee-deep in it, organizing it, and thank you for your invitation.
Invitation, okay, yeah, because you broke up just maybe a tad there.
Okay.
But I caught that clear now the first time also. So she was involved in asking the governor to attend a funeral on behalf of a child involved in just a terrible tragedy, if you will. Now, Don, I also understand that Matt McKinney and others have been really pushing this, that violence is down. I have to share this with our audience. And by the way, we're maybe a little irresponsible. We need maybe to give that number out for those that maybe, you know, indicate they don't know the number where they can call us. Could you just give that number out, Don?
Sure. Now, remember, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio's On Point with Mr. Ron Edwards and Don Allen. And the call-in number is 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. You don't need a quarter. It's a toll-free number, and the lines are open. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
Here's what I'm bothered by with respect to Matt McKinney and others at the Star Tribune. And, you know, I'm one who is most depressed with respect to what was done to Fire Chief Alex Jackson, but that's another subject matter. Now, on New Year's Eve, a week ago today, okay, today, there was a level of violence just within, you know, the downtown area and the immediate area, North Minneapolis, et cetera. And so I said, well, let me, you know, because I've been a critic. I've been a critic, and you know, I know that some within the ecumenical community and others have indicated that I'm not responsible, not being responsible, don't know what we're talking about. And, you know, we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago in which both you and I had been told that we needed to get our minds right and that, you know, there were things that we should talk about, things we shouldn't talk about based on what orders and instructions we got. The only thing is I don't take orders and instructions. But anyways, Saturday night, last Saturday night, New Year's Eve, there were 5 shootings and 3 stabbings.
Yes.
That's 8 criminal activities, assaults. In fact, one of the shootings was a bouncer at a club just down the street from J.D. Hoyt's. I mean, just I want to kind of GPS it, if you will, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in the shooting of the bouncer was shot. He jumped in his car. He was attempting to drive himself to HCMC, which, I mean, been a lot of that going on, too. He faints just in front of the Minneapolis City Hall. Car kind of goes up on the curb. Luckily, some law enforcement officers, police officers, were coming out of City Hall. They saw that he was shot. He was bleeding, et cetera. They continued and finalized the trip to HCMC. Mr. Allen, I mean, I looked at the paper. You know, I figured Sunday's paper, okay, a lot of things going on, people drinking, drunk, that kind of thing. So it probably wouldn't make Sunday's paper, okay. I looked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this past week, sir, and I saw nothing by Matt McKinney, who's the lead crime writer for the Star Tribune, Corey Mitchell, and others who have taken up some of that. I didn't see anything about these. I say it again, 5 shootings, and 3 knifings. And so I guess, see, if we don't report that, if they don't report those kinds of things, then it's easier to sell the general public on this powder puff, you know, reports that crime and violence is down. Now, I say again, Don, and then I'll just leave it alone. There were 5 shootings and 3 knifings on Saturday evening. Before, you know, really before the stroke of 12, and yet nothing was ever reported.
No, not a whisper. But you know, on the January 2nd, Mr. Edwards, Star Tribune with Matt McKinney as the author put out a decline in gunshot injuries as a signal of that. Oh, gunshot injuries. I mean, it's comical. It's hilarious that the newspaper would even publish something like that. The gunshot. There, first of all, Mr. Edwards, as we all know, there's not supposed to be no gunshot injuries in the first place. Okay,
that's
even publish a story to say there's a decline in gunshot injuries is ludicrous. Okay,
yeah.
Again, the Star Tribune is the City of Minneapolis public relation arm. So if they tell the mainstream that everything's okay, I guess, you know, for those of us that know that it's not okay, it must be okay for a Star Tribune to do that. It just doesn't make any sense. And one thing I'd like to throw in, you know, Mr. Edwards, yesterday morning, I'm talking about Friday morning, Mayor R.T. Ryback was on Minnesota Public Radio talking up about the great Minneapolis public school systems. The crime is down, that the police are doing a good job, and that the city is just a wonderful, and that the reason why, you know, he wants people to move into Minneapolis, and said North Minneapolis lost a lot of people because of the foreclosure, but neglected to bring up the tornado. And I had opportunity to call in the NPR and ask Mayor R.T. Ryback, the Minneapolis mayor, about his comments about the Minneapolis public schools. Yeah, he brought up Southwest and Kenwood, and yeah, those are great schools, but look at the great neighborhoods they're in. But what about the rest of the schools? What about the failing average adequate yearly progress that none of the high schools have passed in the last, 6 years now? And as the students go up, and this is what I was saying on the air, I said, as the students in the Minneapolis public schools go up in grade, their proficiency just goes down at nothing, especially Black and Native American children in the Minneapolis public schools. Then I went on to say, I said, you made a statement about North Minneapolis, that it was because of the housing foreclosure that it lost a lot of people, but you neglected to bring up the tornado and how 5,000 families, an estimated 12,000 people have been displaced because of that. And the money that's coming in, again, you know, we know from our Star Tribune back when they were somewhat relevant, they wrote a story last February 16th, 2011, a 10-year lesson in how not to waste $200 million.
Yes, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you read that story, Mr. Edwards, you would see, you know, in the sixth or seventh paragraph, between the sixth and eighth paragraph, that, you know, they talk very harshly about the North Side Achievement Zone and you know, the process that missed the mark. And I said on the air, I said, you know, if you're giving these same people any significant amount of money again, how can you depend on a different circumstance or a different outcome? The mayor's response was, I don't know what this caller's talking about.
Okay, so the mayor, our beloved mayor, said that on those particular matters, including the February 2011 Star Tribune report, because they were chiding, they were upset because former Governor Al Quie and his people had been upset that that Sandra and them hadn't put together the right kind of proposal, didn't know what they were doing,
yeah.
And had not gotten the first round of funding, because that was the genesis of the Star Tribune's article in February of 2011. Now, I'm aware of – I'll just give you an example. Two specific situations here in the late fall of this year. Last year, because we're in 2012 now. In South Carolina and Portland, Oregon, the mayor talked in terms of the very things that you asked him questions about, because I was kind of taken back when you told me that he said he didn't know what you were talking about, because at the Conference of Mayors Design Conference in South Carolina, and at a very, very private meeting with over 100 planners, architects, designers, and et cetera, paid for by money from the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis at a brewery in downtown Portland, Oregon. We reported it in our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. The mayor and them talked about those same kinds of statistics and figures, okay? Mm. And they talked about, in both settings, their anticipation that there would be a significant demographic change based on race, based on the fact that a element which was not consistent with what the overall planning was in fact slowly being eliminated. And this is one of the things my good friend Stu Ackerberg has talked about, and the reason that he agreed to take on the $1 billion hub project, which is beyond just the county social service building. We're talking in terms of a absolute new design, a new community, if you will, which will be absent African Americans, that will basically run from Washington Avenue all the way out to the bridge just before North Memorial. So I was a little taken back, Mr. Allen, that the mayor would say that, because in other quarters, such as South Carolina and Portland, Oregon, at the brewery there, they talk with great enthusiasm about changing and have changed the face racially of North Minneapolis. And so, you know, maybe that's why our good friend Councilman Don Samuels is in Japan now doing some research.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Don's already spending some of that $28 million that they got from the Obama administration. And by the way, they're already in the planning state. Do you know one of the things, I have to say it over the air here, do you know one of the things that will happen, is going to happen, is slated to happen, as they put together the administrative structure for our the achievement zone, the new achievement zone, quote unquote, is that there will be probably three, no more than three, top administrators who will receive nice salaries and significant benefits. Do you know the rest of the folks will be contract employees, which means that you get no benefits?
Yeah, no benefits whatsoever at all. And, you know, when the program's over, your job's over.
Yeah, but I want to repeat that again. In fact, a figure has been laid out about $150,000 to begin a kind of an administrative process, beginning to get everything in shape. And by the way, and our good friend, Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, and her staff are already in negotiations with the Achievement Zone to provide a facility for them.
Mm.
Probably Jordan Park, one of our newer schools that was closed down. and so the Achievement Zone will be moving into, yeah, I mean, obviously, they, particularly with a staff number of 50, oh, by the way, that's how many people they intend to employ 50. They certainly can't put 50 people up in the 1,200 building. So I kind of had wondered where they were going to seek a site, if you will, and looks like they're negotiating with our good friends, our good buddies there at the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Interesting. Yeah,
sir.
I couldn't believe, Mr. Edwards, some of the rhetoric that's been coming out of the mouths of even the people that got the money, because, you know, a Friday before Christmas, you know, Ms. Sandra Samuels, Executive Director of Northside Achievement Zone, was on KMOJ, and, I mean, she sat there and she talked like Sister Girl number 29 and said, hey, if this doesn't work, if there aren't changes in 5 years, I will step down. And I'm saying,
you know, I had already left the city. I heard that. I heard that that statement was made. And so that means that if we can't get it done with $5.5 million over a five-year period, and my sense is there will probably be an overrun in the first year, this year, 2012, I assume the check and everything has arrived. I imagine they'll probably run about 6.3 as it pertains to the expenditure. And so cut into, actually, you know, the Achievement Zone, I got to tell you, boy, they've been really moving along. They actually have about $37 million in play because they got a piece 2 weeks before the announcement, the formal announcement on the $28 million. They had received probably about $7 million. Can't get them to talk about it, though, but they had received about $7 million from a $45 million similar package that basically concentrated in St. Paul and with the White Earth Indian tribe up in northern Minnesota. So actually, the Achievement Zone, my brother, is sitting on about $37 million, man. Nice package.
Yeah, nice package for them. And, you know, I've been in there at the 1200 building, Mr. Edwards, to try to have an audience with Sandra Samuels and Michelle Martin, who's the chief operating officer of the Achievement Zone. And you talk about the redirect and the avoidance, you know, because I wanted to find out, you know, about the $500,000 in seed money they received from North Wayne Community Trust to launch the organization. But we have to remember, this is where the Star Tribune is incorrect again. It says, I'm looking at the story, a 10-year lesson on how not to spend $200 million, okay?
Okay.
It says here, the North
Side. This is February of 2011, right? So,
yes.
So that we have absolute transparency. Okay.
Yeah. It says, the Northside Achievement Zone, a collaboration of 60 organizations designed to the educational achievement gap of North Minneapolis students, also received $500,000 in seed money from Northway Community Trust to launch the organization. In quotes, "We wouldn't be where we are without the resources from them," said Michelle Martin, chief operating officer of the Achievement Zone. What the Star Tribune and Michelle Martin do not disclose is that they were the Peace Foundation when they got the $500,000. Okay? They were not Northside Achievement Zone.
And yes, and I think even a year ago on these programs, in fact, I think in June of 2010, and of course all this could be recaptured by going on demand through Blog Radio.
Yeah, we have a caller.
We talked about that.
Yeah, and we do have a caller.
Oh, let's get our caller in there, Doc.
Caller, you're live on the air. May I ask your name, where you're calling from? Hello. Okay.
There they are.
Hello, caller.
Yes, I'm just listening in, that's all.
Okay.
I'm learning Blog Talk Radio, that's all.
Oh, you're just learning. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay, but back to the February 2010, or 2011, I'm sorry, Don, 2011 article. By the way, who was that article written by so we have absolute transparency here? Who was that article written by?
Gene Hopfensperger. Hopfensperger. H-O-P-F-E-N-S-P-E-R-G-R-G-E-R.
Okay. So you're absolutely right. When one looks at the chronology and the calendar of activity and existence, when the seed money came down, it was for the Peace Foundation because there was no achievement zone. And in fact, I think you read a document which was the what is it called 922 or whatever it is. that talked about the salaries and et cetera. And so. By the way, where is the Peace Foundation headquartered now? Is it still around?
This is the funny thing, Mr. Edwards. When I go to a charity guide, charityguide.org, and I'm just kind of doing that in the studio while we're having this conversation just to make sure that I'm doing it, and you pull up the Peace Foundation, the Peace Foundation address is the same as Northside Achievement Zone.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
1200
yes.
Building, same suite?
Yes. Yep, same suite.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they have, what do they have, dual management or what?
I don't know what's going on with it, but it just seems like they haven't changed it on here.
Yeah, because just earlier this, late this week after Chief Alex Jackson announced his retirement, 2 days later, Steve Brandt wrote an article kind of chiding the new incoming white chief of the fire department for double dipping because he's drawing both his pension and he also is the chief trainer receiving a nice salary for the hazardous waste training in the fire department. And so I was just kind of wondering, do we have dual responsibilities here? Are we drawing the same check or... And how was the $500,000 spent? I mean, because that was a crime fighting effort, right?
Yeah, that's for the crime fighting effort. And I'm looking at it. It's 55411, and let me just the address here. Basic information, Peace Foundation. It has just Minneapolis, 1200 55411. The category crime, legal related. Year founded, 2004, ruling year 2004, of course. And I'm going to look at the 990s right here. Okay, it's not going to let me look at that. I'm going to look at the financials, see if I can get in there real quick, because I'm right here online.
Okay, you're right on your computer. By the way, as you're doing this, because we have some people, apparently in the chat room, et cetera, what is the date of the founding of the Achievement Zone. What is that date, Mr. Allen?
I'm looking at it right now. Let me just I'm bringing it up, and it's gonna ask me Achievement Zone. Did you mean Achievement? Yes, I did mean Achievement Zone. Here, they have Achievement Zone in California, Florida, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, but we want the one in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yes.
And
because that's where the concept of Achievement Zone really came from, is from that conglomeration. But go ahead.
And this is the funny thing, Mr. Edwards, that people don't understand. I'm looking at GuideStar.org, which is like the nonprofit Bible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come up.
Oh, it has to, because the federal government just gave that nonprofit $28 million of taxpayer money.
I'm looking at it right here. I'm looking for keywords, achievement zone. I'm looking for the achievement zone in Minnesota. And
maybe look for Northside Achievement Zone.
Northside. Okay, I think I did that. Achievement. Well, we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Let me go right here. Northside. Achievement. Okay, here we go. Let's see what we come up with again. And I'm looking for it again. The same thing. And in GuideStar, Mr. Edwards, it says your search produced zero results. I mean, we know.
Oh, wow, is that right? Well, that's puzzling. Yeah. Well, do this as we're talking, Mr. Allen. Could you acquire the corporate headquarters telephone number? Maybe we can just give them a quick ring, and they can tell us where we can find the information online.
Okay, I can do that right now.
Yeah, let's dial their number. I imagine in that they're in the organizational stage, if you will. I know that they're hard at work. I know their board has already been positioned and is in place, and in fact is receiving organizational training and et cetera. That's part of about $150,000 in administrative development money. But let's just call them. Maybe they can tell us where we could, because I'm interested in the date, because I don't want to be unfair, because you have read an article from the powerful, powerful Minneapolis Star Tribune. So, you know, that's the gospel. They're the gospel. And they said something about the money and as it pertains to organizing the achievement zone, okay? And that was February of 2011 that article was written, right?
Yep, correct.
And the Peace Foundation, which certainly enjoyed a lot of investment, if you will, was founded in 2004, right?
Yes, yes. And we are calling.
Is that the phone ringing there? Yeah. Okay.
That's us calling.
Maybe Mr.
Thank
Andre
you for
Deuce.
Calling Northside Achievement Zone. Our normal business hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Oh,
if you know your party extension, you can dial it at any time. If you'd like to use our dial by first name directory, please press 1. If you'd like to use our dial by last name directory, please press 2. Otherwise, remain on the line, leave us a message, and we'll get back to you as soon as we possibly can. Thanks again for calling Northside Achievement Zone.
Okay, well, there's no one in the office, obviously, at this point.
Hi,
on a Saturday. But we now know for our listening audience, both domestic and international, that certainly they have a phone, if you will, and
yeah,
a recording that indicates the existence of the organization. You know, you probably, Mr. Allen, in your leisure time on Monday, need to check with the server there that you're talking about, OnStar or what it is, because they must be slipping, man, because we have an organization here in our cities, in our beloved cities, that just received $28 million in federal taxpayer money to do a multiplicity, a variety of things. And this site retrieval, if you will, doesn't have them listed. Now, as you said before, they have some achievement zones listed all across the United States, okay? But maybe we're missing something. Maybe, you know, we've lost a little edge or something. You know what I'm saying? But,
no.
You know, $28 million, I mean, boy, this is an organization. Because also, isn't a part of what the achievement zone also is going to do was to kind of deal with crime and youth problems and et cetera. Weren't they going to do that just like their friends across the street, Shiloh International Ministry?
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to, that it's funny that you say that, Mr. Edwards, because, again, you know, that just brings up something real quick that, you know, again, you know, our Minneapolis mayor, our mayor is asking folks, you know, where the guns are coming from and who's arming our children in North Minneapolis. And, you know, again, I always, my standard answer for that is, you know, maybe you want to walk across the street to Shiloh International Ministries and talk to Bishop Howell and his crew over there, because they're the ones that you're funding to be out on the street. And
absolutely. Along with a longtime and beloved church member, V.J. Smith, who is the national president now of Mad Dads.
Oh,
and who also has a similar, what I call, companion program. And see, one of the things that I know that goes on in discussions in the boardrooms of like the Minneapolis Foundation, Sandy Vargas' operation, Northwest Area Foundation, the McKnight, is that oftentimes these gentlemen and ladies attend meetings there in the boardroom, and they pontificate and enunciate for, you know, hours, if you will. Their knowledge and insightism, if you will, of what's going on in the streets of the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, the metropolitan area, et cetera. And, you know, that's an interesting point, Mr. Allen, that you make. In fact, we had Bishop Howe one Saturday in the late summer of 2010 on our program here, and you asked him that question. By the way, for people that want to authenticate what I'm saying, is that you can call that program up on demand. I think that was like the midweek, second Saturday in July. And Bishop Howe couldn't answer that question. And then I think you indicated you actually went over in an attempt to ascertain the information, and you couldn't get any kind of response. You couldn't even get any meeting, could you?
No, I couldn't get a response, and I couldn't. That was the same time they were having that, that conference on violence.
We've had so many of those. But not a many. Okay.
With the different folks there that, you know, they had kids coming into the University of Minnesota, UROC, to get paid $50 to find out, to talk to the kids about violence, because the people...
That's right. Headmaster William English was helping to facilitate that at UROC, if I remember correctly.
Exactly.
Okay.
Let's see. 612-302-1463. That is Shiloh Ministries' number. And I doubt if anybody answers it. But, I mean, I'm just really curious, you know, Mr. Edwards, to find out
where the guns are coming from.
Where the guns
are. We want to stay on that one because, you know, everybody was talking about that during the days immediately following. And, by the way, for our international audience, domestic audience outside of Minnesota, 3-year-old Terrell Mays was shot and killed at around 6:45. p.m. on the evening of the 26th of December, and was declared dead around 8:30 a.m. the following morning.
And this is just...
Shiloh Temple International Ministries, how may I help you?
Yes, you are live on the air, on the airwaves, broadcasting on...
We do on Sundays, yes.
Okay, no. I'm saying that you right now are live on the radio, and we're trying to get in touch with someone that's involved with the violence prevention program financed by the city of Minneapolis there at Shiloh.
Uh-huh. Oh,
is there
who
anything?
Are you?
My name is Don Allen. I'm calling you from Blog Talk Radio's On Point, which is a radio show every Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m.
Oh, Don, let me have you hold on, please.
Okay, thank you.
That was a rather intimate response, Don. Okay, all right.
I know who that is, Mr.
Yeah, well, let's make sure we get right to the point. We're trying to find out, you know, what kind of surveying and et cetera they've been doing with respect to all the weapons and et cetera on the streets, and can they give us a number? You know, how many guns have they recovered? Things like that, Don. You go ahead and do it.
Exactly. I mean, I'm just going to see if we're getting any... Hello? No, they're not back yet. Yeah, because I find this very interesting when, you know, there are people out there. And Mr. Edwards, you said this to me offline as well as online several times before. There are no black gun manufacturing plants in the United States. Black people don't produce guns. They don't make weapons. And this Friday, I got a call from Thursday, I got a call from Professor Nakima Levy Pound, who stated that she was very outraged and upset because Hennepin County was going to give people caught with weapons or caught with guns a mandatory 5-year federal prison sentence, and the people who sell the guns, which are usually, you know, white males who control that trade. Hello? Yeah, hello. You're live on the air on Point. Who am I speaking with?
This is Bishop Richard Howell.
Hey, Bishop Howell, how you doing? This is Don Allen. I'm calling about the recent violence and things that are going on in North Minneapolis, and wondering if you had an idea of where the weapons are coming from and the gangs or other circumstances taking place in your area across the street.
Don, I don't know where the weapons are coming from, but like you, I'm very concerned. Whoever's supplying these weapons is certainly in bad taste for our young people. I'm a Minneapolis homeboy all my life. And I've never seen Minneapolis at this rate of supplying guns to young people. Back in our day, we were playing basketball, football, baseball, and the baseball diamonds and the park boards. And to hear of this new so-called sport is just distasteful and disgusting. But to answer your question, we just don't know who's supplying this stuff.
Yeah, and it's a real challenge because, you know, we've gotten several reports here at On Point on Blog Talk Radio that there's a lot of trafficking going on, and we understand, you know, I'm sure you agree with this, Bishop Howell, that there are no black people that own gun manufacturing plants. It's just like the war on drugs, you know. We don't grow coca, we don't grow poppy seeds in the United States, black Americans, but yet our neighborhoods are trashed due to drugs and drug trafficking. So I guess we're going to have to figure that out one way or the other.
I think, Don, I think the conspiracy certainly is working on behalf of those haters who certainly wanted to see black people lynched and hung years ago. They found a new way to let black people hang themselves.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I hate this. I hate this new, this neo Jim Crow. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I think that that more needs to be done. But these young people think that's all they can do now is kill people or shoot people or have the bragging rights of owning a certain weapon that probably is not even owned by the city police, by the city officials. In fact, the weapons are probably more sophisticated than what the city owns. You know, it's just terrible. It's just,
I agree. You know, and I respect you as a man of the cloth because I come from a family with reverends, deacons, church mothers, and folks like that. And, I mean, I don't know how to express my gratitude for you coming on the air and talking with us for this short time here, but there's one more
thing
I'd like to ask you just real quick here. The current, and I know there's a separation between church and state, but Bishop Howell, honestly, I mean, we have our African-American representatives in that area and our different leadership organizations and, you know, the terrible, tragic shooting of three-year-old, the baby, Terrell Mays. And
yes,
the best we could do as a community is come up with a $1,000 reward, you know, and that wasn't even the community. That was Crime Stoppers, and we still don't have a suspect. So is there any way to change that?
This recent tragedy of this young boy is probably, as they say, the straw that broke the camel's back, that by now, how much lower do we have to go? Any killing is wrong. One killing is one killing too much. But this young boy's killing certainly has woke up our neighborhood again.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell you how many funerals we have conducted here at Shiloh.
I've been to my two there, yeah.
Young people, and I know other faith churches, New Salem and others, have also conducted similar funerals. We hate this. We all hate it. But, you know, I think it certainly has bringing our community closer together to see that at least there's one thing we all agree on. None of us like it. We hate it.
I don't. Well, hey, thank you very much for your time, and I wish you a happy new year. And from me and my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and thank you and have a great day today.
Thank you, Don.
Bishop Howell.
Thanks, Ron.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Mr. Edwards.
Well, you know, the bishop raises some questions that I think, you know, needs additional and continuous examination, particularly in that I'm interested to, let me put it like this, in order not to be confrontational in any way or disrespect our members of the clergy who at least will pick up the phone and answer and attempt to answer the calls. I'm just puzzled on why, Don, we haven't had a report from the federal authorities, from the ATF, as an example, who are by legislation the agency, the federal agency that is supposed to be able to tell us these questions. I mean, you know, I know that the Obama administration is under some significant controversy with respect to a program that unfortunately they inherited, but that they continue to implement
which led to the death of a Border Patrol officer and also led to the death of a couple of citizens along the Texas border. Now, I know from long experience that the ATF keeps this kind of information. They've had an operation. In fact, in one of the articles this morning, you will see the name of Inspector Lucy Gerald. I well remember Lucy. She served with me on the Department of Justice's police community relations team imposed on the city of Minneapolis by the federal government. Lucy is the commander out in the 3rd Precinct, Don, and for those that want to know what that's at, that would be back over towards Snelling and up towards the freeway and et cetera. Now, there has been a federal task force for almost a year in the 3rd Precinct, and periodically they expand. One of the reasons they wanted to be in the 3rd Precinct, they wanted to keep an eye on our Somali brothers. And by the way, we haven't had a call in a long time from our Somali brothers. And they wanted to keep an eye on Somali activists and et cetera as a part of, you know, the whole thing of young Somali men, you know, disappearing and turning up on the Horn of Africa kind of thing. And, you know, I just realized as I was listening to the bishop that we have not heard any report. Now, going back a week, when on that Wednesday I was given a call at the location that I was at out of the city of Minneapolis, out of the state of Minnesota, in fact, and I was told how County Attorney Mike Freeman was supposed to, on that Wednesday, the baby was killed on late Monday night. On Wednesday, Mike Freeman was supposed to make this grand announcement about how many guns they'd taken off the street. But according to the column written by Matt McKinney, if I'm not mistaken, the statement was made that they didn't feel that it was appropriate given the tragedy that had just taken place. Okay? Mm-hmm. But I was puzzled by that because, you know, this has become like an annual rite of passage, Don. We get these statements by different politicians about how they're doing buybacks and stuff like that, and they're getting the guns off the street. And then if you ever show up at one of those situations, people are bringing in old antique guns yeah. with dirt, and et cetera. Yeah. As Bishop Howell just made a statement, though I don't totally agree with him, because the police department has a very significant arsenal, if you will, high-powered rifles and things like that, probably the kind of rifles that could have sent a bullet through the siding of a house, through the chair, through the stairs, and into the back of a 3-year-old baby's head. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, Don? I'm not being accusatory. But, you know, I kind of wonder how we haven't heard anything from the federal government about how many guns they've taken off the streets to make our city more safer. Now, you know, Bishop Howell said something very interesting, and that was he was talking in terms, in response to your question, about the trafficking, word we don't like to use, that is going on in weapons, okay? Now, we reported a year ago that we were aware that, as an example, Mexican cartels had brought weapons as well as grenades into Minnesota in the early part of 2010. Those grenades are still allegedly unaccounted for. Oops. And there was an article almost 8 months later, again, Minneapolis Star Tribune, for all those that want to authenticate what we're saying here at On Point, about some grenades, about a situation that took place at some Mexican joint on Lake Street, and an informant indicated that there some grenades were in play, and possibly one of them was used in a situation in which has been suppressed. You know, I just think that we need really to press this, Don. Maybe we can find out from the chief, you know, of the Minneapolis Police Department, Tim Dolan.
Yes.
What his understanding is of how successful this special federal task force has been operating in the 3rd Precinct for the last year, how well they've been able to cure this problem. Now, of course, they may take the position that because there is some kind of activity within the black community, they don't feel like they want to share that. They may be letting out secrets or et cetera. But, you know, Don, like you said, somebody's got to be providing these guns. And I got to tell you, man, I've been at far too many crime scenes, you know, and, you know, I would suggest no one challenge me on that. And I've seen too many corpus delicti, if you will, and I've seen the shell casings and et cetera. And I mean, these young boys are firing state-of-the-art weapons, man. Now, you're a former military, you're a veteran, a specialist, and et cetera. We know and understand armament, if you will, munitions, if you will. These youngsters are getting in their hands. That we're not talking about no 22, Remember we used to talk in the old days about you carrying a little old 22 Roscoe, you know what I mean, with a little old bullet that would burn up after 40 yards. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, but sir,
we're talking about. Go ahead. We got a caller. Go ahead.
You're live on the air. Your name and where you're calling from.
This is Helen Williams.
Hey, Miss Williams, we were just talking about you.
Oh, Miss Williams, how are you doing?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Well, sir, can you just hold on?
Go ahead, Alan. I was listening to a Bishop Paul response when he called in, and one of the areas you guys mentioned is about the $1,000 reward. I am deeply concerned that that's all that we have. And I think one of the things we need to use is the public media to increase that $1,000 reward. That's what we as a community and as a whole needs to do, work to increase that $1,000 reward.
Well,
that is unacceptable.
If I could interject here, there is a story in January 6th, yesterday's Star Tribune on their online blog. It says, reward fund for Terrell Mays Jr. shooting climbs. If you want to make a donation, make donations payable to Minneapolis Mad Dad for the benefit of Terrell Mays. Now, I wouldn't write Minneapolis Mad Dad a check to save my life, okay? So they're trying to raise it, but they're going, they're putting the cart before the horse on that, as far as I'm concerned.
And Miss Williams, I totally agree with you, Ron Edwards here. I totally agree with you. I was very disappointed as I was journeying back into the state of Minnesota to hear a amount of $1,000. I can well remember the tragic shooting of Guadalupe and the rallying of the overall community, of both Mexican community and the Caucasian community, and et cetera. Now, I do remember when Keisha Edwards, no relation, was shot and killed in a similar manner, shot fired through the wall, killing her. I remember there was some discussion about the difficulty of coming up with money. You know, I hear our leadership talk in terms of how well off they are, how well endowed they are, I'm talking about financially, and how they oftentimes, you know, I think about it, arrive at situations in $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 vehicles, if you will, and et cetera. And I just could not understand why even Dr. Howell, Bishop Howell, and others could not have reached in their own pockets and come up with another additional $1,000. I mean, because see, what white folks are saying is that we in the black community are just playing a game, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
That we're just playing a game. We're talking about this, but we aren't concerned. Now, Ms. Williams, I've known of you for quite some time. I know the effort and volunteer commitment that you've made. And so I appreciate what you have said and the manner that you've said it, because you have had contact and relationship with many, far too many, by the way, of our community members who have lost loved ones. And by and large, there's never any reward. Okay. You know, the statement is that, well, you know, the Negroes must have been doing wrong and et cetera. In fact, I would suggest that one needs to take a look at some of the very biting, and I hope that Bishop Howell and others of the ecumenical community would speak to the Star Tribune about carrying these statements by Caucasians, talking in terms of that maybe this child deserved, or that this child died because he came up with poor parenting. Now, I don't know how in the world Don Allen, Helen Williams, I don't know how in the world we could say, and excuse this specific language, I don't know how in the hell we could say that this 3-year-old child caused his death based on the circumstances that he had nothing to do with. But that is on the websites. I received a call from a law enforcement officer this morning and said, you know, it's really tragic what they are doing to the image of the African-American community behind the death of this 3-year-old baby. And I repeat that again. White bloggers are saying that this child died because of the circumstances in which he was born and lived into. He sounded like some of the Republican candidates who are now saying the Negroes are lazy. That's the reason they don't have jobs. There's too much racism, folks, going on in this town. But Ms. Williams, anything in addition, observations you have? Are you still with us?
I am. My concern is this. Look at all the national attention Jacob Wetherlin got. There is even the Jacob Wetherlin Foundation that's out there. But most importantly, we have some strong political parties in our community, and I think they should take the challenge on leading this to increase the reward. I think that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If I can get you both to hold, I think we have an interesting caller here because I think they might have questions for both you, Ms. Williams, and my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards.
Oh, fine. Put them on.
You're live on the air. May I ask who's calling?
Hi. This is Mustafa calling from Minneapolis.
Yeah,
Mustafa, how you doing, brother? We were just talking about you. I hadn't heard from you for a while. Happy holiday. What's your question, sir? We got about 6 minutes left.
Yeah, my question is, I also seen on different blogs and websites blaming, as you said, blaming the parenting and things like that. And it's sad, and I agree with Ms. Williams that we need to take steps. I remember attending what they call safety meeting in Coil Center and asking a police lieutenant who was there about the shooting that happened months ago there, and he said he was not even familiar with it.
No.
So nobody pays attention, and another thing that I want to share with you is Obama administration prohibited people sending money to their families back home in Africa.
Yes, yes, we're aware
and
of that.
So
yes.
Many people are suffering. It's estimated over 100 million. And then the sad thing is, all these DFLers, Keith Ellison and Senator Franken and Klobuchar, they manipulating the community and telling them it's bank's fault. You know, it's small community banks that they were dealing with. They are afraid of being prosecuted. And instead of they're manipulating our community, telling them it's not the government that said it's a bank's fault. And I think we need help. Your help with that to pressure them to not to starve people to death.
All right, appreciate it. We're down to 3 minutes, my brother. Thank you, and we'll be looking to hear from you next week. Thank you. Ms. Williams, Mr. Allen, again, Ms. Williams, we certainly appreciate you calling in. The gentleman who is a leader in the Somali community always makes some very keen observations and et cetera. He's absolutely correct. There's some explanations that we can't seem to get. But I want to get back to what you, Ms. Williams, called to talk about, and that is, you know, I'd like to see something, particularly given how well off our organizations are. There's an infusion of $28 million, and me and Mr. Allen were earlier talking that one of the missions and goals of the foundation, known as the Northside Achievement, is to deal with crime and prevention. Is that not correct, Mr. Allen?
You are absolutely correct.
And Ms. Williams, I think and hope that you would agree that one of the things that certainly helps prevention is to bring people to justice who have carried out dastardly acts and crimes. Would you not think so?
Oh, most definitely.
Yes. I would certainly like to see the Northside Achievement Zone at least kick in $2,500 to $3,000 to kick that fund up and kick that reward money up. You know, I'm just going to go on the record as saying that. I just think it would be the right thing to do there, particularly in light of the fact that the Northside Achievement Zone and some of their proxies, the Mad Dads, have said that they're going to allow the mother, Marsha, to join a new organization that they've formed, Mr. Allen, called the Prevention Interdiction Crime Fighting Committee. I mean, really, I don't know what that means, you know. But anyways, Mr. Allen, let you wrap it up. And Ms. Williams, want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you, but I still feel that our political figures should need to lead this challenge to increase that reward money.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I know right where you're going. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we agree 100%, Ms. Williams, but you know what? We have a situation now that's boiling that we're going to talk about next Saturday where the 58B representative, Bobby Joe Champion, who's trying to run for Senate, take Linda Higgins' seat, does not want to debate Mr. Troy Parker. But we'll talk about that next week. Again, you've been listening to On Point with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards and myself, Don Allen. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Black Focus 2 with Mr. Edwards. And we thank you for listening. And it's never a mission impossible.